Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Many things have been increasing in cost in recent years. All you have to do is look at the index of leading economic indicators, look at the retail reports and the financial pages, and my goodness, how things are getting to be expensive. But some things have grown in cost out of all scale with others. One of those is the cost of the American wedding. Right now, coast to coast, north to south, east to west, the average wedding in America is costing north of $28,000. $28,000. Let me tell you what that has led to. It has led to the fact that not only in this time of economic recession, but even before that happened, a good number of young couples are saying, we can afford to be married, we just can't afford to get married. This is one of the strangest turns in human history in my imagination. And we're living in a time in which now the wedding has become the focus rather than the marriage. It's time for Christians to think about this, and I've talked about this to some degree before, but I want to go at it today with you. I want you to think with me about how we need to reconceive the wedding in order to get on to marriage. And we're going to talk about the Christian significance of the wedding. We need to talk about how Christians should conceive of the wedding, and we need to talk about what's happened to us that has led young people to say, we can't afford to get married, of all things. How in the world did our forefathers and foremothers ever pull that off, when they had so much less than we have? The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, I'll tell you, the bottom line for me is that we need to make it easy for young people who should be married to be married. We shouldn't be making it difficult. Some of you right now are involved in all the fall-de-rol and complications and cost of weddings. You are neck deep in bills and perhaps even in debt as you're thinking about a wedding. What in the world happened? And how should we think about it? The phone number again, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm looking forward to that conversation with you, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Tomorrow is a significant anniversary. I don't know if many of you have noted this before, but tomorrow, April the 10th, the year 2010, marks the 40th anniversary of the death of the Dream. That's right. It was 40 years ago tomorrow that Paul McCartney informed his colleagues he was leaving the Beatles. Now, that was not very meaningful to me at the time because I wasn't a big Beatles fan then, and I'm not a big Beatles fan now. But here's what makes this interesting. A good number of people in the 60s and in the 70s, well, especially during the 60s, they saw the Beatles as the hope of a new utopian future. They saw the message of the Beatles, Imagine, remember that song? They saw it as the new spirituality. They saw the Beatles as the sign of a new harmonic convergence in the culture. At one point, John Lennon himself said of the Beatles, we're bigger than Jesus now. Well, and then 40 years ago, on April the 10th, 1970, the headline in London's Daily Mirror was, Paul leaves the Beatles. Thus ended, as Mark Rusticia says, the most influential rock band of all time, and with it, their utopia. Very, very interesting observation. You start thinking about how people remember the 60s. And I was alive during the 60s, but I was a child during the 60s. It's amazing how many baby boomers look back to the 60s as the supposed time of great moral insight, of heightened spirituality, of tremendous social awareness. And then you look back at it and you say, well, maybe it wasn't what people thought it was. There was no utopia with the Beatles or with anyone else. And it's just another reminder to us that generation by generation, there's the hope to find some kind of secular salvation. There's the quest for some kind of secular utopia. And they all die one way or another. 40 years ago tomorrow, one died with the headline, Paul leaves the Beatles. Very interesting stories coming out of Great Britain, by the way. There is an election there on May the 6th, and that's going to be big for the future of Great Britain. The incumbent Labour Party is going to be defending itself and against pretty high electoral odds. It'll be defending themselves over against the Conservative Party led by David Cameron. Very, very interesting news coming out in the last 24 hours of the general election in 2010. Again, coming up in less than a month there in Great Britain. For the first time in a long time, abortion has become an issue in the election in Great Britain. David Cameron gave an interview to a Roman Catholic newspaper in which he said that he would support pulling back the time of allowable abortions from where it is now to an upper limit of 20 to 22 weeks, lowering it from 24 weeks to 20 to 22 weeks. Now, you'll notice that's just a move of 2 or 4 weeks, but that's going to be huge for the British people. And it gets back to one of the issues we've talked about here in the United States, and that is something has moved the electorate on this. Something has changed the minds or reached the hearts of the British people, and it's the same thing that has been used here, and that is the ultrasound image. The ultrasound image has made clear the humanity of the baby in the womb. And by the way, the sanctity of human life does not begin at any week, whether it's the 24th or the 22nd or the 20th. It begins at the moment of conception. But it's at least some sense of hope that comes with the unease of the British people because they have seen those images. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in terms of the election cycle there in Great Britain. But now that David Cameron has made this public statement, it's going to be in play for that election coming up on May the 6th. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal is out with a very interesting front page story about the United States, where in the aftermath of the Obamacare health care legislation, the abortion debate has now gone to the states. Reading here the story from Anna Wild Matthews, she says less than 3 weeks after the passage of the landmark national health care bill, the abortion debate is being reignited. Lawmakers in at least 6 states are pushing for legislation to block abortion coverage in some health plans. I'm looking here at a map indicating that the states that are considering this include Tennessee, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Missouri, and Kansas. 5 states already have insurance laws that prohibit abortion coverage. These include Missouri and some other states. It'll be interesting to see how this comes down, but it's another reminder to us that the issue of abortion isn't over. It isn't over by a long shot. That's one of the things we need to keep foremost in our minds. Going back to 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court thought in its Roe v. Wade decision that they would put an end to this debate, but not hardly. Instead, they themselves, by their judicial usurpation of the issue, made it far worse. And it's just going to continue until, indeed, there is some final determination on this issue. And I'll tell you, as a Christian, I'm absolutely determined that so long as there is a Christian voice, it has to be on behalf of the unborn, on behalf of all those whose life and dignity is at risk. And there is no way we can compromise on this issue. And it'll be interesting to see where this goes. But the fact that it's on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, after all, 3 weeks after the health care legislation passed, is a sign that it is certainly not going away. Another sign of the times came from the journal More Intelligent Life that is published by the Economist of London. I was absolutely shocked by this. The dateline on this is London, and it has to do with the fact that there is now in Great Britain over-the-counter DNA testing for paternity. This story goes to the Clockwork Pharmacy in Hackney in northeast London. And there between the baby lotion and the bunion plasters, there is a box that is marked a DNA test. Prashant Patel, the owner of the shop, says, "You would be surprised how many children don't actually belong to the man who seems to be their father." Estimates right now in England are that non-paternity runs between 1 and 30%, with the best estimate being in the region of 10%. Very, very interesting. This is another sign of the times. This was unknown and unable to be determined in previous years, certainly until the over-the-counter arrival of these DNA testing kits. You had to have a laboratory involved, but now you don't have to have a doctor. You don't have to go to a laboratory. You just send in the test, and you may find a surprise. That's a very, very interesting thing. Big story also in the Wall Street Journal that I think should have our attention on joblessness. Daniel Henninger, writing in the Wonderland column, is pointing out that we are now facing in the United States an epidemic of unemployment among the young. It could be catastrophic when you start looking long term, because youth unemployment is going to grow. This economic recession means that many older workers are continuing in the workplace. That means that even as jobs are being cut back in number and in quantity, they're really being cut even more dramatically as you go younger and younger in the age cohorts. What in the world will happen about this? Well, as Daniel Hininger saying, the only hope is that we unleash the American economy to be a great engine to produce jobs. I love one line in this. He says this, all these young people can't be organic farmers or write scripts for 30 Rock. There's got to be a real job out there somewhere. And we need to make certain that we do not ruin this economy such that young people can't get jobs. If you want to see what that looks like, just go to many of the streets of Europe where you will find unemployed young people, and it is not a pretty sight. That gets right back to, again, what young people are supposed to do and when they're supposed to do it. One of the things we want them to do is to get married. How are they going to do that when a wedding costs $28,000? What are we going to do in the face of all this? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, I've got some pretty explosive data here in my hands, and I guarantee you it's explosive because some people are going to explode when they hear it and when they hear us talk about it. And that has to do with the cost of weddings. Right now, the Condé Nast American Wedding Survey indicates that the average, that's average, American wedding now costs more than $28,000, significantly more in major cities. And during the time of a deep recession, this news story by Ebby Ellen in the New York Times says, you know, folks are having to rethink how you get that done. Okay, you know, here, let me tell you one of the weirdo things about this. You know, as a Christian looking at this, you know what's missing from this is the sense that these people are not cohabitating. You know, in other words, if you're in a secular society, in many ways, you can just say, well, all the wedding is just a formal celebration, and they're already living together. They're already enjoying the sexual intimacy of what should be in marriage. And they're already living like a married couple, but they just can't afford the wedding. You know, that would be a very interesting dynamic. And if you're a pastor, you deal with this all the time. I had pastors, two of them last week, call me with very similar situations in which they said, look, we're trying to deal with this. How do we deal with this? Very interesting question. But, you know, from a Christian perspective, there are an awful lot of Christian young couples who aren't going to cohabitate, and they aren't going to have sex outside of marriage. They're determined not to. And they're ready to get married, and they need to get married. And there's no biblical ground why they should not be married. And there's every biblical reason why they should be married. But you know why they're not married? It's because they can't afford to get married. They can't afford the wedding. If the average wedding is going to cost $28,000, and now it does, there are an awful lot of folks who just can't afford to do that. Oh, and by the way, you just got to know, when you play with averages, this means that there have to be a whole lot of weddings that cost a whole lot more than $28,000. Because we all know there are people who are getting married spending, you know, virtually nothing. But the average, $28,000, boy, that's pretty daunting. And all you have to do is know someone of marriageable age, or, you know, have a child or niece or nephew or grandchild who's of that age, and see all the weddings they're in, and tack up all those costs, and wow, $28,000. It's not just the money. It's the idea. The wedding has become the thing. And I said some people aren't going to like this, but I'm going to tell you this right up front. For way too many people, including way too many Christians, the marriage now takes a backseat to the wedding. The wedding is everything. The wedding has become a great display of self-aggrandizement. The wedding has become a great public statement. The wedding has become not just a celebration, it's become a thing unto itself. There are parents who say, we have to give this wedding at this certain cost, or we'll be embarrassed. Well, I'd be embarrassed if my kids needed to get married and weren't. I think we're embarrassed about all the wrong things. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How should Christians think about this? I mean, is it time for Christians to reconceive what we expect out of a wedding? Let's talk about it. What do you expect out of a wedding? You know, the Bible talks about weddings. Weddings should be times of celebration. But more importantly, the wedding is a solemn, formal, public acceptance of covenant, the covenant of marriage. It's a public statement about monogamy and fidelity and the until death do we part nature of that commitment. It's wonderful that it's a party, and it should be. Jesus himself performed the very first public miracle of his ministry at a wedding in Cana of Galilee. But you know what? When it comes to weddings, something's horribly wrong when young people who need to be married aren't married, not because they can't afford to be married, but because they can't afford to get married, with the wedding being the great obstacle. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear, are you thinking about this? You and your local church, are you working this through in terms of your own children? Perhaps some of you who right now would like to be married, how are you thinking this through? What kind of pressures are you feeling? Well, how should we bring some Christian biblical analysis to this question to make sure that we're thinking rightly? The phone number, 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. We're glad to hear from you always by email, Twitter, Facebook, and all the rest. You know, when you start thinking about these costs, think about all that is embedded in the cost of the wedding now. You've got, and my wife was pointing this out, you've got brides who have now not just one gown, but two, one for the ceremony and one for the reception. You've got wedding gowns that cost hundreds and in some cases thousands of dollars that are worn for a matter of minutes or just a couple of hours and never worn again. You've got huge catering and entertainment expenses. You have engraved invitations, some of them now coming so ornate and so expensive that they would put presidential inaugural committees to shame. We've got a whole industry. We have a wedding industrial complex. If you don't believe that, all you need to do is look at a book entitled One Perfect Day, The Selling of the American Wedding by Rebecca Mead, published just a couple of years ago. She's pointing out there is an entire economy now around weddings. Very, very interesting stuff. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let me give you the bottom line. The marriage is the issue, not the wedding. You can have a marriage without any kind of elaborate wedding. That's just not a requirement. The sad thing is you can have far too many weddings that aren't followed by successful marriages. And that's a big and crucial problem for us to face as well. There are couples who are putting so much into the whole idea of the wedding that they're really not putting the work into the marriage. The phone number is 877-893-TALK, 877-893-8255. We had a call from Brent who called in to say that his wedding was $5,000. He thought that was a lot. You know, I'm not even sure. I'm looking back, 25 plus years at our wedding, and it was a wonderful affair. And it was formal, and it was nice, and I'm very, very thankful for it. And I know my in-laws in particular spent quite a bit of money on the wedding itself and on the reception. But when it comes right down to it, you know, it was a church-based affair. And it took place in a church fellowship hall of the reception, and it took place in a church sanctuary for the ceremony. It was really, really different than what you have today in so many weddings. Deborah wrote in to say, I'm 29 and a half years ago, my husband and I spent about $50. Oh, excuse me, it's 29 and a half years ago. Excuse me, the wife, she and her husband spent about $50 on the wedding day. You know, the minimal legal requirements are not that much. You really don't have to pay a whole lot to get it done. Your marriage license, process the fees, and that is the only mandatory cost state by state. Is it right to hold a party? I think it probably is. Even more importantly, it's important to have the solemnization of marriage, the commemoration of marriage, the exchange of vows take place in a public way that makes a statement about the public character of the institution of marriage. But you know, if the wedding is more important than the marriage, the cart is before the horse, to say the very least, and we're doing something that's a grave disservice to marriage, which means it's a grave disservice to the glory of God. And we're doing this a grave disservice to young people, or for that matter, even older people who need to be married, when we make the wedding rather than the marriage the focus of our attention. $28,000 on average, folks. That's the down payment on a house. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. $28,000 and up. I got to tell you, that's a new day. No wonder we have a wedding industrial complex if people are willing to spend about $30,000 on the average wedding. The problem here is not really economic. It's an underlying problem that points to the fact that the wedding has eclipsed marriage as the fascination of a lot of people. Why in an age? Let me ask you this, just in terms of the secular society around us. Can you get your mind around this for a moment? Why in an age when marriage is being so sidelined and people are so confused about marriage, when roughly one out of two, it's not exactly that, but roughly one out of two marriages end in divorce, when you have cohabitation experienced by about 70% of young couples before they get married, you look at all this, then why is it when marriage is so minimized, marginalized, the wedding is now so amplified? You know, the wedding is now the deal. Huge. And it hasn't strengthened marriage. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Jeffersonville, Indiana. Andrea is listening on WFIA. What do you think, Andrea?
Hi, sir. My thought is a lot of people will not like, but I believe that it goes back to the woman. Most men don't plan these gigantic weddings. And I think that it goes also way back to modesty, a lack of modesty, a lack of humility. The Ephesians 4 and 5 woman, where is she? Are we about dyeing our hair and wearing this and looking like that and painting our faces? Are we about you know, being a woman, a godly woman, walking in faith and in trust and humility and just being that beautiful Proverbs 31 woman. I mean, which is most important? These days, like you said, it is a secular society. So I believe that that gets us so hypnotized, and Dolce & Gabbana and Versace and so on, not to promote them, but they're beautiful designers, and it's just entrancing. So I do hope and pray that we as Christians just join together and just kind of give each other a pat on the back, not for having this or doing that, but just simply for being and loving and just, I don't know, I'm not saying the word correctly, but it's just, I honestly believe that's it, and it's saddening me. I'm a former model. I modeled for 14 years of my life, and since rededicating my life to Christ, I see it completely differently now. I see it so... Oh, it's everywhere.
Appreciate that insight, Andrea. I really do. And by the way, Rebecca Mead in her book, One Perfect Day, The Selling of the American Wedding, points out that what a lot of women in America hope for out of the wedding is self-transformation. They're a new kind of consumer, a consumer of an experience, the consumer of an experience that is supposed to be about what it would mean for the person to be literally changed by the experience of the wedding. I don't think the wedding is going to deliver on those promises. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. And we're here talking about weddings, talking about the cost of weddings, and talking about what all this means. Interesting statements and comments that are coming from Facebook and digital media. Amanda wrote in to say that she and her husband had basically a $4,000 modest wedding. And it was church-based. We helped show God's love through those church family members to our non-saved members of the family. I think that's really good. You know, the center of the wedding for Christians should be the gospel of Jesus Christ. It should be the display of the gospel in the midst of the wedding. And that is absolutely crucial to our understanding of all that goes on there. You know, folks, when you start looking at this, you realize that the way we spend our money tells a great deal about the way we understand life. It tells us a great deal about what we consider to be reality. It tells us about our aspirations. And that's why this book, I think, by Rebecca Mead makes it all the more interesting, because this is a secular analysis, not a Christian analysis. And she's writing about some of the things you've all heard about, the kind of bridezilla person and mother of the bride problems that can emerge from some wedding context. But her major point here is how Americans have really turned into consumers of an experience through the wedding. There is something the family of the bride, the family of the groom, the bride and groom together, the bride especially, hope to derive from this event and this experience. And in far too many cases, what they want to derive is some kind of self-transformation. The wedding is no longer just a necessary rite of passage. It is no longer a first and foremost a context for the exchange, the public exchange of marriage vows. It is now, in far too many cases, self-expression, the hope for self-transformation. It's more important than the marriage. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. We're living in an age of $28,000 weddings on average and a declining marriage throughout the culture. What's going on here? How should Christians rethink this whole equation? How should we conceive of the wedding? Let's talk about what we should expect out of a wedding and why it should matter to us. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Farmington, New Mexico. Eleanor is listening on KTTW. Go ahead, Eleanor.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. My husband and I have been married for 50 years. And we were married in a Baptist church in Arlington, Virginia. And my point is that today Baptist church has been torn down, and everybody that was at my wedding are probably all dead and gone. But it's the Lord that sustained my marriage all these years, and that my husband and I are a testimony for keeping our marriage together for 50 years. And it was the marriage, not the wedding, that was the important thing.
Eleanor, it was worth doing this program just to get your call. Thank you so much for calling. I want to ask you a question now. I want to ask you, if you could speak to young couples right now, Christian young couples, and give them some encouragement, what would you say to them about this?
I would say that to be sure that the person that you're going to marry loves the Lord more than he loves you, and then that way you would know that you love each other and always have the Lord ahead in your marriage and consult him in every decision that you're ever going to make.
Eleanor, thank you so much for your call. Folks, I got to tell you, if there's anyone in the world who has credibility to talk about marriage, it's someone who's been married for 50 years. Eleanor, God bless you and your husband for your faithfulness, and thank you so much for calling. That really sets the stage for us to think in much healthier terms about this whole thing. $28,000 wedding, breakdown in marriages, compare that to what Eleanor just had to say. You know, when you think about what's passing and what stays, you know, marriage continues, and the significance of marriage for eternity continues. As Eleanor pointed out, the church building in which she and her husband was married, it no longer even exists. And I love the way, the poignancy in which she said, most of the people who were there aren't even alive anymore. Yeah, but there's a marriage that is alive to the testimony of the goodness and the grace of God. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Robert's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, Dr. Mueller, I want to thank you for your ministry. I really get a lot out of it. Thanks so much. The comment that I had had to do with Satan is always trying to attack us. And what better way to attack a young marriage than to attack it financially, number one. And number two, we're living in a Second Timothy society, so it's very important to people to focus on themselves and to lift themselves up. And so that those two things to me make sense why people are spending so much money on weddings.
Robert, thank you so much for your call. I assume there you're talking to 2 Timothy about the phenomenon such as itching ears, where people just want to hear what they want to hear. And when you talk about expensive weddings, setting people up for financial and marriage problems later on, you know, that's something that parents really ought to pay some attention to. Because if indeed the opulence of the wedding is supposed to set the standard for the marriage, well, there are an awful lot of marriages that aren't going to be able to keep up with that, certainly of young people. And I go back to the fact that young people are not getting married as they should be. And the statistics tell the story. The delay of marriage is now by a factor of many years from when young people should be getting married. And economics, well, that's a big part of it. The economic of being married, the actual financial challenges of being married is tough enough. And then the getting married, if you make that $28,000 for, you know, for just for crying out loud, you look at that, you say, how many parents can afford that? How many parents should spend that? And then much less young couples trying to do the very same. You know, here's something I propose. And I mean this. This is not just toying with an idea. I think two or three times a year, more in some churches, maybe less in others, the church ought to have a wedding. It just simply ought to say, we're going to be here. We're going to have everything ready. We're going to be available if couples want to get married. And we're going to invite the church to come celebrate it as the body of Christ. And as many young couples, or for that matter, even older couples, who are biblically qualified to be married, we're going to celebrate those marriages, and you're not going to need a whole lot of money. If you want to wear a wedding dress, fine. If you don't, that's fine, too. If you want to have groomsmen and bridesmaids, that's great. If you don't, that's great, too. We got deacons and sisters here in the church. They'll be glad to stand up for you. We're going to have plenty of witnesses to all that goes on here, and everybody's going to celebrate. And, you know, churches know how to put on a meal. Now, whether it's potluck or dinner on the grounds or whatever, or just mints and peanuts and punch, you know, I can remember as a little boy having to get dressed up for weddings. That was one of the main things I remember. And yet, you know what I was looking forward to? I was looking forward to all those multicolored mints and the mixed nuts and wedding cake at the end. Nowadays, it's a 7-course meal. In some weddings, it's a heavy catering expense. It's not at the church. It's certainly not in the church basement or in the fellowship hall anymore. In many cases, at the country club or some expensive place. And the costs just go up and up and up. Now, if you've done that and you're planning to do that and you can do it to the glory of God, then God bless you. But if that's holding you back and indeed becoming an obstacle, we got a problem. The issue is marriage. The wedding's the way to get into the marriage. The wedding's not a thing unto itself. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Caroline's listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Caroline.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I want to say, first of all, that I agree completely with what you're saying, that the marriage is far more important than the wedding. But did want to also just make the point that a bride who takes a lot of time, not necessarily money, but a lot of effort into making and planning a wedding and certainly making herself ready can be a beautiful picture of the gospel and the ultimate wedding that we will one day have of the marriage to the Lamb. You know, Scripture speaks to the bride who has made herself ready, and that's, I think, a bride who takes a lot of time and effort into preparing for this day can be a beautiful picture of how we should be working to sanctify ourselves and make ourselves more beautiful in preparation for our ultimate wedding day with the Lamb.
Caroline, thank you so much. I'm going to thank you at several levels. First of all, thank you for calling, and thank you for calling with a particular point that I probably should have made, but probably wouldn't have thought to have made, certainly not as eloquently as you did. That's one of the reasons why I'm glad that we had a female voice to make that argument, because my guess is that means something to you in a way that comes through in that wonderful way you presented it that can communicate to others. It communicated to me, and I understand that too. Yes, the bride getting herself ready for the bridegroom, what a wonderful picture of the church anticipating Christ. And so long as the gospel remains at the center of the wedding and as the focus of the glory of the event, then I think all things will be well. The problem is when indeed the wedding becomes an end to itself and the bride or someone other than Christ becomes the sheer focus of attention, when all Christian modesty is thrown out in an extravaganza of wedding celebration, and then all too often what ends up on the other side following is just not a healthy marriage that honors Christ. We got a problem. We can fix it. We'll be right back with more. Great discussion, folks. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all those who wrote in by email, Facebook, Twitter, and all the rest. Folks, this morning, my website at albertmiller.com, I posted a new article asking the question, can animals be gay? That's the question, by the way, that is asked on the Easter Sunday cover story of the New York Times Magazine. Folks, it's very, very interesting. The news article really covers the waterfront in terms of what people are trying to prove and disprove with the sexual behavior of animals, asking, well, the kinds of questions that in a highly politicized, politically correct, ideologically driven age, people are now asking. Let me tell you what the battle's all about. The battle's over the word normal and whether normal is normative. And so what you have are now people who are trying to prove that homosexuality is common in the animal world, in order to suggest that it's just perfectly natural and shouldn't be a big moral concern in the human world. The story, I have to tell you, is frankly often hilarious when it doesn't mean to be. As John Munalum wrote about this, I mean, here you've got an admission from many of these animal experts that they're not really sure exactly what gender is which when they're observing these animals. And you have one biologist suggesting that it is indeed a heterosexual bias, an overall presumption of heterosexuality that leads many biologists and animal watchers and naturalists to assume heterosexual behavior when actually it's not. Folks, let me get to the bottom line on this with you. Christians are confronted with all kinds of data, and some of the data that confronts us could well be that there is homosexual behavior in the animal kingdom. There could be animals. Albatrosses are the focus of this article, but it could be other animals as well who engage in some kind of same-sex sexual activity. What does that mean? Well, you know, these folks who are doing this kind of research are driven by an evolutionary viewpoint, and they've got to come up with some explanation for it that fits with evolution. That's not our concern. Our concern is to come up with an explanation for it that fits the scriptures. And what the scripture tells us is that we live in a Genesis 3 world, that on the other side of the fall, the consequences of sin are that bad things happen in the natural order. Natural does not mean normative in a biblical worldview. Earthquakes are natural, but they're not normative. Tsunamis are natural, but they're not normative. Illness is natural, but it's not normative. It's not the way it should be. And if indeed they are able to document homosexual behavior among animals, that doesn't mean that it's right. What we gain from the scriptures understanding of what God's purpose was in making us sexual beings and giving us a gift to sex, what we have from scripture are God's boundaries and guidelines about how we are to use this gift, clear statutes and commandments about how we are not to use that gift, not to misuse it. So when it comes right down to it, we're not actually going to learn from the animals what we need to know about human sexuality. We got to get that from the Creator, not from the creatures. Back next week with you for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.